we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Dursley Gazette, read by Peter Donaldson.
To commemorate VE Day, there will be a nuclear, biological and chemical warfare, cooking, weapons and marching display by the local cadet force.
Oh dear, ready, steady, cook. Thank you, Jean Dubb of Gloucestershire, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. We'll be welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Bill Deeds. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Gillian Reynolds. Before we start round one, here's an item from the Eastern Evening News.
Retired headmaster Percy Potter received three official telemessages yesterday as he celebrated his 100th birthday. His bad eyesight kept him out of the army during the First World War, but he served in the Observer Corps in the last war.
Francis, you get the first question, as usual, and it is this. Who sharpened his claws after success with the claws?
It's Blair, or whatever. Blair, yes?
Blair.
Mm-hmm. Who got through his clause for change, abolished the bit where it says common ownership and all these terrible things, and the new clause for says there'll be privatised industry shares for all, and they'll work together to create a common social market or something. Completely meaningless twaddle anyway. And John Major got rather annoyed about this because he thought meaningless twaddle was his exclusive property. So gave an interview to the Sunday Times saying that Tony Blair was the biggest con trick since Little Red Riding Hood was conned by the wolf dressed up as the grandmother. Mm-hmm. Which, as always, with these stupid metaphors that Major blunders into, has gone wrong on him. Because, of course, the point about the wolf dressing up as the grandmother is that she did eat Little Red Riding Hood, which suggests that Tony Blair is going to eat the electorate, either they're going to vote for him. So it's not a very persuasive metaphor for the leader of the Conservative Party to use. But never mind, he's trying. Next week it'll be the elves and the shoemakers, I expect. Or the golden goose.
The gnome
Snow maker. White and the Seven Dwarfs. With a cameo role for John Selwyn Gummer. Is that
absolutely right. This was Labour leader Tony Blair, who cracked down on union power following his success over Clause 4. This means that Labour are no longer committed to nationalising Great British industries, which has come as quite a relief to the shareholders all over Germany and Japan. Mr Blair came in for strong criticism from MP Diane Abbott, whose main job is to sit on the Labour executive. And the Labour executive said he wasn't over-impressed either. Bill, how nice to have you back on the programme this most appropriate week. Your question is this. Why should top brass get less brass on the house?
Well, I think this is all about generals entertaining each other, or entertaining somebody. I've never been entertained by a general or an air marshal. I have no interest in this subject, whatever. I lose nothing if they're going to be cut down. On the other hand, one does wonder who've been entertained in the past, who have gone there. What sort of people? Skirted? Trousered? I think one should stop there. I think I'm going to stop there.
Bienvenida Buck. I know. This concerns a report by Sir Peter Cazalet that was critical of heavy expenditure on official Ministry of Defence residences and entertaining. Top brass stand accused of wasting taxpayers' money, but they deny it. It's not wasted. They fully enjoy every penny of it. The Navy came in for special mention by keeping seven mansions around the Portsmouth, which they say they need to provide work for Navy chefs when they're on shore. And besides, someone's got to cook the books for them. Gillian, who ensured they did a U-turn round the houses?
Oh, this is the amazing day when some bright spark discovered that people were going to get taxed for their mortgage insurance policies. And this threw everyone into this huge panic in the government because they said, no, we can't possibly let on that we're going to do that because it's the elections this week. So within the space of a matter of hours, the government did this total U-turn and said, oh, no, we're not going to tax people on their mortgage insurances. Certainly not, especially after having insisted they all take them out. And lo and behold, the week trickles on. And by Thursday, people were squeaking feebly like Bill the Lizard in Alice. But what about the insurance on my credit card? But what about the insurance on my sickness and the government? But certainly by midweek, we're still saying, well, we'll tax it, we'll tax it. Maybe after the local elections, they might think again.
Who can say? At the time of this recording, ladies and gentlemen, we do not know the result of the local elections. We can guess. And if we're wrong, they'll cut that bit out. Now. These were the government on-off proposals to tax mortgage protection insurance. The plan would have meant higher charges for anyone losing their job and trying to keep a roof over their heads. Kenneth Clark agreed to scrap the scheme after he was lobbied by a Westminster man with a wife and two children who has fears for his employment prospects after Thursday. Labour described the affair as another example of the government's inefficient bungling, but in fact they're the most efficient bunglers in the business. Alan, will you have a listen to this?
I can see that little angel on your knee. Can't you see? Well, he kind of sort of looks like me. For I'm the boy whose only joy is loving you. Who worries till he hurries home when day is through. And I'm the guy you give your goodnight kisses to. Remember me. Try to remember me.
I could remember my father singing that. And that was Remember Me by Bing Crosby. The question is, whose finest hour was a mystery to the little ones?
Yes, well, despite Barry Took's wonderful impressions, which many of us thought would keep the imperishable memory of Churchill alive for all eternity, 65% of state children thought he was a door-to-door salesman. Clearly mixing him up with his grandson. I mean, they knew nothing about the war. They thought Hitler had made one film about Charlie Chaplin that was rather funny. And they thought Joseph Goebbels was just a footnote in a urological textbook. Thank you. The slow ones that are the best. The fact is that these celebrations that we're about to enjoy, either yesterday, tomorrow, or last week, depending when you're listening to this, if it's pick of the week, it's 3 months ago, meaningless to most of the children educated by our great teachers. Except in public schools, everybody knows who Churchill is. I don't know what that tells us about public schools or about the state system.
He was a Harrovian, is that right?
Yes, he was. Yes, yes. I think he never got out of the bottom form, which used to be called the army form. They haven't abolished it since then. People who were put in this form were stuck there for their entire school career and then packed off to join the army because they were fit for nothing else. But somehow he rose above it.
He did. Indeed, he did. This was a survey that showed that many young schoolchildren don't know who Winston Churchill was. Their guesses included a songwriter, the United States president, and an insurance salesman. Part of the problem may be that a recent school's video on the subject of the war included just 14 seconds on Churchill. The Department of Education said there would have been more, but they couldn't afford the copyright payments. Another test involved a video of Mr. Chamberlain saying, "I have in my hand a piece of paper." Most of the kids knew the bloke in the funny hat, but what's a piece of paper? And the scores at the end of round one are, as they always are on this programme, 4-4. We start round two with an item from the Daily Telegraph.
The Royal Navy is investigating an incident in which a wren was discovered allegedly having sex with a sailor in a corridor of their ship. "What they do as boyfriend and girlfriend on shore is nothing to do with us," says a Navy spokesman. "But everyone knows the disciplinary position."
Francis, where did the cops swing into action in the cops?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Think Burnley, and you won't be far out. Or Blackburn.
Oh, well, it's a protester.
Yes.
In a tree.
What are you talking about? I don't know. I've lost control of this already. I don't know what's going on.
Chaps in tree houses.
Yeah.
I thought it was amazing that man went up and got them out.
That's right.
He was strapped onto the tree, roped onto the tree.
Was he?
Yes.
This happened near Blackburn, where hundreds of police and security guards tried to move anti-M65 protesters out of their treetop houses. The under-sheriff of Lancashire got into the spirit of the occasion by announcing, "We shall fight them on the beeches and the oaks and the sycamores." The protesters built homes and roosted in the trees like birds. And for the sake of their paintwork, the police were very careful not to park their cars underneath. After several charges into the branches, the riot force had left with just one more problem. How do you get the police horse out of a tree? Bill, your question again. Who wants home rules applied in the country?
Ah, there's talk of a country party.
Yes.
There was even talk of my leading it. A very strong countryman, yeah. Whether this is relevant to what you're asking or not.
No, it isn't, but it doesn't matter. I'm enjoying your answer.
It's a country party rather than support people who still live in the country and pursue country pursuits and have bees, make honey, you know, grow vegetables, all that stuff. And it felt that they are being rather put down. I tell you who they're being put down, the Ramblers. The Ramblers want to have freedom to wander where they will. And so the country party is going to stand up against the Ramblers. Mind you, this may be all wrong, but I mean, it's something that I feel deeply about. Have I missed the target?
Well, just by a mile or so, I would. This is the Council for the Protection of Rural England, who criticised large house-building firms for spoiling the countryside with bland homes out of keeping with their surroundings. They want to see new rules to make local styles obligatory as appropriate. So Devon would have thatch and cob, Norfolk would have timber frame and flint, and Essex Portland-style cladding with a neo-Georgian PVC wishing well.
Statue of trees
are
Gorman in the garden.
That's right. A spokesman for Wimpy said this would mean a big change for them. "All our plans have gone down the toilet," he said. Or as we say in polite Wimpy, "owns the largest room in the house." Gillian, here's a piece of music for you.
Looking through the window, you can see a distant steeple. Not a sign of people.
Who wants people? Where the steeple bell says good night.
Sleep well.
We'll thank the small hotel together.
Well, that was, of course, Small Hotel, but for a bonus, can you tell me who was singing?
It was Ginger, wasn't it?
No, it's Pearlcar and Lyndon Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson, you silly idiot.
Wasn't it Ginger Rogers?
No, it wasn't. No. It was B.B. Daniels and Ben Watson.
Oh, of course it was, yes.
And your question is, who planned a welcome for the other side at the seaside?
This is his dear Dottie O'Grady, a seaside landlady in the Isle of Wight. Now, the great question of the ages, was she a German spy, or was she just, we're not allowed to say this word on the BBC anymore because it's politically incorrect, but I'll say it anyway, a loony.
She was a seaside landlady. They're all Nazis. I didn't know anybody.
Old duck, you know, used to sit down by the waves waiting for the Nazis to roll in. It's a good job for that woman. She never lived next to my mother, because we were down our shelter one time and my mother heard Dolly and Kitty Himes next door in their shelter learning German, and she jumped out and she went in and whacked them with a whole water bottle for being traitors.
It's all about Dorothy O'Grady, the Isle of Wight landlady, who apparently spied for Germany from her Sandown guest house. Mrs. O'Grady played the part of an eccentric rather than a spy. When arrested by soldiers in 1940, she said, "I suppose they got the idea I was a spy because I was wearing a little swastika flag on my coat." We don't know what the training courses the Germans sent her on, but camouflage obviously wasn't one of them. The authorities found her hotel full of detailed plans of beach defences of the Isle of Wight, together with a booking on the car ferry to Portsmouth for a party of 27 panzer divisions. They also intercepted a Morse code message telling the Germans only to invade between 7 and 8 if they wanted a hot bath. Alan, your question again. What sparkling prices make your eyes water?
Apparently, two health sores this week. One is that carrots kill you. And the other one is that Perrier bottles will finish off what carrots started. They explode. You walk into Waitrose, you reach out for this thing, looks like a hand grenade, and lo and behold, it is one. And it says that it's very good, and it comes from a natural source in France and all that. It's obviously a Jacques Delors manufactured thing designed to bring us to our knees, which Hitler couldn't do, but apparently Perrier bottles are exploding all over Britain.
As a subclause to this, we could also add that mineral water is not all it's cracked up to be. You'd be just as well turning on the tap.
That is exactly the
expert's
answer.
Expert's claim.
You mean all that rubbish about Perrier was a wrong answer?
Yeah.
Well, it was designed nothing to confuse even the enemy, Barry.
This is the Witch magazine report that proves bottled water is really water in bottles. Tap water often contains more of the trace elements essential to living beings, and quite a lot of it actually contains the living beings to prove it. Some of the fancier branded waters can cost 4,000 times more than the same stuff out of the tap, but the water companies are doing their best to narrow the gap. And the scores at the end of round two are interesting because Francis and Bill are 6, but Alan and Gillian have leapt into the lead, goodness knows how, with 9. Francis, I think this is more in your territory. Who took the biscuit with his novel Burial?
I assume this must be a former neighbour of mine by the name of Brian Aldiss. Would that be the chap? Who, when he was a little boy at school, used to do dirty drawings and write filthy stories. And to avoid getting into trouble, he put them in a biscuit box and buried them in the grounds of this school. And then earlier this year or last year, he mentioned this in an interview and said, I wonder whatever happened to them. So the boys at the school equipped themselves with metal detectors and went round digging great holes in the cricket pitch to try and find this thing. And they found it this week, a box, opened it up, and it's now going to go to something amazing, which I didn't realise existed, called the Brian Aldiss Archive in the Bodleian Library in Oxford. It's had shades of Winston Churchill all over again. He's going to sell it to them for 12 million quid. His dirty little wartime drawings, Jane from the Daily Mirror, you probably remember her, Barry. Yes, that sort of thing, anyway, I think. Scantily clad women, mainly.
This refers to author Brian Aldiss, who got a team of boys from his old school to dig up a collection of his early work. He buried there in 1943. Mr. Aldiss used to sell his illustrated naughty stories to boys in the fifth form and got into terrible trouble because he was a teacher at the time. A team of lads with spades and a metal detector found the 50-year-old biscuit tin in a nearby wood, and the publicity prompted Geoffrey Archer to try the same stunt. Thousands of volunteers turned up wanting to bury everything he'd ever written. Bill, piece of music for you. Will you listen, please, to this?
Every day should be gay. You work just a little. I mean just enough to get by.
Do, do, do.
You finish and then
you romance again.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Too much business.
Hurry, hurry.
Too much trouble.
Worry, worry.
There's a million other things I could think of.
Chasing money.
Nothing to it.
Oh, it's funny how we do it when the only thing that matters is love.
Every girl should agree.
I must have been going to the wrong place.
Yes.
It could be Jack Buchanan, no, I don't think it is.
It's Gerardo and the Savoy Hotel Orchestra, actually, recorded in the 40s. And your question is, which holiday may or may not have happened?
Well, of course, we should really be celebrating Labor Day.
Yes.
And on Labor Day, it was the finest day you can imagine. The sun shone, and everybody wished they'd had a bank holiday. But somebody abolished Labor Day. I think it went out of fashion when the Cold War ended. And so everybody had to work in their office instead of going out and lying on the beach. Is that anywhere near the mark?
That is absolutely on the button.
Listen, you just tell me a fascinating fact.
Oh, no,
I think you should
that.
Share
I
it.
Anecdotal
you
stuff.
Should share it. Go on, go on.
Geraldo was actually called Gerald Bright.
Yes.
And he had a brother called Sidney Bright.
That's right.
Who was an arranger. My mother went out with him.
Oh, really?
Mm. I mean, it's not as good as going to school with Churchill. She couldn't do that. My mother tried getting into Harrow, but couldn't manage it. But she went out with Sidney Bright.
The night before she married my father, on June the 30th, 1935, Sidney Bright stood in her garden and sang, "I know that someday you'll want me to want you when you're in love with somebody new." And then he went home, and then she got married to my father. That's absolutely true.
You didn't get that at Harrow.
No. Fancy calling yourself Geraldo. Isn't it wonderful? Yes. He sang with Teddy Brown and his band of renown.
Did he? Yeah. I once was, in, when I was a young man, I was in the car with Teddy Brown.
He was a big man.
Teddy Browner.
Teddy Browner was a gravy we had during the war.
Yes, women used to put gravy on their legs because they couldn't get stockings.
That's not why they put gravy on their legs.
Oh, I see. You don't get this in proper quiz shows now, do you? Alan, what may be the cream but gives an unbalanced view of slimming?
This is about women who don't put gravy on their legs. They ought to. They put this stuff, which is made from the gonads of pigs. And this is to get rid of cellulite, that stuff that makes women look like crepe. And men, too. Those of us who've spent our mature years rubbing in women's thighs with this stuff can tell you that it doesn't do anything for them at all. The thighs do not move for you.
But some geezer with a bit of an Oxford artery's name seems to think it does.
Well, he doesn't think it does.
He doesn't think it does all of that.
He said it was all the massage that made them lose weight around their thighs, because the thing is pummeled into them for hours on end, and no wonder their thighs tone up. But it's nothing to do with the cream. They could be massaging and gravy.
Why wrong the subject? What's wrong with exercise?
What?
You know, if you want to get slimmer, what's wrong with exercise?
You're absolutely right. I try to exercise women's thighs as often as possible. it is very good for them. It brings the gentian violet to their cheeks.
This is all about an excellent cream. Called Thigh Tone 1, which is supposed to reduce the size of thighs. It was tested by a team of St. John's Ambulance women who tried it on one leg only and ended up with thighs of different sizes. They first noticed something was wrong at a football match when two stretcher bearers ran out and went round in circles for 5 minutes. And the scores at the end of round three are much the same as they were at the end of round two, because Francis and Bill have 10, but Alan and Gillian are still in the lead with 13. Before we start the final round, here's a story from the Northampton Chronicle and Echo.
Flatulent funny man Gary Stevens has had to cancel a special performance for VE Day because health and safety bosses won't grant him a fire licence. Mr. Stevens, stage name Gaseous Gary, said, "I fire gas into a cone of flames. The sound is very realistic. I had planned to break wind in time to wartime hits like the White Cliffs of Dover, and we'll meet again." Speaking from his German tour, Mr. Stevens said, "I wanted to use my talents to pay tribute, but I've fallen foul of health and safety executive guidelines. I feel snubbed and saddened. I'll probably be doing concerts here in Germany instead, where I'm more appreciated."
Yes, and we all know what he's talking about, don't we? Thank you, Andrew Knight, for sending us that. Bill,
yes.
What big cat had no get-out clause?
Clueless. Absolutely clueless.
Well, this is about the zoo question, is it?
It's a motor car.
No.
Oh, it's the other one. It's not the zoo question.
It's not the zoo question.
The leopard.
It's a motor car.
I will do this one, if it's
Alan is about to tell us.
It's about the Jaguar 220S.
It is.
Which went on the market at £285,000 in the days when all those red braces had money. And they all said, no, we want it, please, I want to give you 300. No, 400, 500, I'll give you a million. And they all put their names down for this Jaguar. And then the bottom fell out of the market. And they were stuck with it, and they were committed to buying this car. And now they have to pay £100,000.
Not to have the car.
Not to have the car. Mm-hmm. Serves them right. No, that's malicious. I'm sorry for them.
Customers claimed the car had been devalued because Jaguar had reduced the specification, hence they're making money by not selling cars. Skoda are working on the same marketing principle, except that they can't find a way of reducing the specification. Gillian, what should cost £55,000 to get stoned early?
somebody turning out their attic found an ancient tape of the Rolling Stones singing away, barely when their voices had broken and they all had rather short hair, and it's expected to fetch buckets and buckets of money down the cell room.
They were singing We'll Meet Again underneath the arm.
Very good at the Hoban Empire, the Stones. Remember them well. My mother used to take me to see them.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This is the earliest known tape of the Rolling Stones, which is expected to fetch £55,000 at auction. The lads had actually been together some time when it was made, but they had to wait for Mr. Edison to invent something to record it on. The original guitarist said they sounded absolutely diabolical, so it's nice to see years of success haven't changed them at all. Except for their clothes. These days they're wearing replacement hipsters. Alan, why does a carrot a day keep the doctor at work?
Yes, well, the thing is that during the war, we used to drop carrots into Germany to really mess up their night fighters, because if you eat a carrot, you can't see in the dark. In fact, you can see very little at all. And that's why we dug for victory. We dug up all these carrots, and we went on carrot raids over Germany, and Luftwaffe pilots ate these things, and they couldn't find the aircraft. I mean, it's awful. This is because of the skin of carrots. And as a result of spraying it with pesticides to make the pests healthy, you have to take everything off the carrot. All you can eat is the green bit at the end.
But before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting for us?
I have, Barry.
Good.
It's from the Sunday Times. Uh-huh. The concert listings for the South Bank Royal Festival Hall. The Band of the Life Guards celebrates 200 years in the presence of HRH, the Princess Margaret.
Thank you, Francis. Dill, what have you got for us?
Mark Roberts was completely naked as he came into view while Fred Talbot, the forecaster, was predicting a warm, sunny day. Mr. Talbot, who delivers his forecast from a floating map of Britain in the Albert Dock, Liverpool, tried to continue, but Roberts began to wander across the country towards Scotland. He attempted to jump from Scotland to Ireland, but lost his footing and fell into the dock. When he had hauled himself out, Mr. Talbot handed Roberts his clipboard to cover himself.
Thank you, Bill. Gillian.
It's an announcement from the Hillier Gardening Club. Dear Gardening Club member, it is with great pleasure that I'm able to introduce our Bath Spring promotion, Springtime. This promotion is run over 3 weekends, starting with our Spring Madness weekend. A free cup of tea or coffee and a free pack of slug pellets make the weekend complete.
Another winner, Gillian. Alan.
I, by coincidence, have a gardening piece as well, but it's topical. Well, I mean, it would be 50 years ago. It's from the Bournemouth Evening Echo. It says, Mrs. Irene Graham of Thorpe Avenue, Boscombe, delighted the audience with her reminiscence of the German prisoner of war who was sent each week to do her garden. He was repatriated at the end of 1945, she recalled. He had always seemed a nice, friendly chap. But when the crocuses came up in the middle of our lawn in February 1946, they spelt out Heil Hitler.
apart from winning the Cutting of the Week award, let's have a look at the final score, which is pretty simple, really, because Francis and Bill, a well-earned 10, struggling against the tide a bit, but Alan and Gillian triumphant with 18. Well done. Before we leave you, here's yet another cutting from the Daily Telegraph.
More than 5,000 hand wipes intended for a VE Day street party in Weymouth and Dorset have been returned because their labels are written in German. Council officials have been informed by the suppliers that the alternative is a label in Japanese.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Bill Deeds and Gillian Reynolds. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson. The producer was Alan Evans.